today I am talking with Angelica Johnson from Open Roads Bookkeeping. I am thrilled to finally be doing this. We've been putting this call off for quite a while because, you know, COVID and then kidney stones and then a kid got diabetes and like she's literally just like been punted, I don't know, 83 times or so. So I'm thrilled to be able to talk with you today, Angelica. For everybody listening and watching right now, Angelica is actually our bookkeeper. So not only, you know, am I excited to interview her, but I'm also excited just to introduce you guys to her because we obviously like her a lot. We give her our money. Like, I think that's one of the best ways to show somebody like, I like you. Right. So anyway, that said, Angelica is one thing we really like about Angelica is that she is also a full-time RVer like us. And that was actually one of the main reasons that we switched from our existing CPA and bookkeeper over to Angelica, because this life is weird. And she understands it better than most. So Angelica, tell us a little bit about your business, what it is that you guys do, what do you specialize in, anything like that.
Okay. We started Open Roads Bookkeeping back in 2018. We saw a niche there that really felt like it needed to be addressed. And our primary clients are other full-time RVers and predominantly women-owned businesses. We do have some male-operated and owned clients as well, but you know, that's kind of where we started. I know. And I think the men have actually taken over right now more than the women. But like I said, that's, you know, kind of where we started, being a woman-owned business, wanted to cater to other, and mostly we deal with solo entrepreneurs. So that's kind of where we started in the niche that we found that really needed to be dealt with. We do full service bookkeeping, payroll, taxes, you name it. And we pretty much handle it in the financial world for business owners. So been traveling for 4.5 years now, full time, and just enjoy the community that we have built kind of around us.
So yeah, I think one thing that a couple of things that come to mind is, you know, our primary audience is obviously not going to be full timers, but they are much of what you just said. They're solopreneurs. They're typically, you know, either just them or them and a spouse, mostly women owned businesses. These are typically the person who uses our services, uses our software, is somebody who kind of started out, you know, with a camera in their hands, and they just really found that they loved this. A lot of them, you know, had their first kid, took some time off from work, and then realized like, I kind of like this. Like, I don't really want to go back to that job thing. And I'm pretty good with this camera. And, you know, they just kind of fell into business ownership. So I think it puts them in a really interesting position when it comes to the stuff that you do, because there are not a lot of photographers who got into photography as a business. They didn't chase it down saying, I want to start my own business. What's a great business to start? I'm going to start a photography business, which to me means that they usually don't go into it with a whole lot of business acumen and a whole lot of like even interest in things like bookkeeping and, you know, all of this, taxes. And so I love that you focus primarily on solopreneurs. Do you do any other than like your business owners that you serve? Do you do any just personal bookkeeping for people? Because I know Absolutely. Like you do our personal bookkeeping, but it's because you're already doing our business stuff as well. Right. You do some where you don't do their business. You just do just like they just have a regular 9-to-5.
So I do taxes for, you know, anybody, just a solo person or family, but we also do some bookkeeping for personal, and we also do some financial coaching for personal. And I'll get into that a little later with a new brand that we're launching that is specifically revolves around personal finance and financial education.
I love that. All right, cool. Yeah, let's definitely talk about that. So let's dive in now, though, to this kind of your bread and butter solopreneur, female-owned business. So, and, you know, kind of keeping in mind that the vast majority of people listening or watching this are going to be either portrait or wedding photographers. So, you know, family portrait, some of them will do pets and, you know, high school seniors and all of that, but typically kind of one-to-one, working with families, working with couples, stuff like that. So what would you say, I think, let's start here. What would you say are like the like kind of table stakes, the like foundational things that they should be keeping track of throughout the year so that they are prepared for someone like you come tax time?
Well, I think one of the biggest things that we need to start with is really talking about and getting down to the heart of forming their business, because there are so many misconceptions of forming and what, you know, the differences between a sole entrepreneur and a LLC. And then we get into things like partnerships. So let's kind of back up just a hair and start before we start talking about that. So sole proprietor would be a form that would just basically where you're working under your own social security number. And so as you do your work, everything goes on your own personal taxes with your social security number. An LLC becomes a little bit more form. This is where you register your business with the state and you receive an EIN from the IRS. And these, to me, this is some personal protection here, talking about going from a sole proprietor to an LLC. What that means, kind of in the photography world, in any world, in any, you know, career post here, is a personal protection for your own personal finances. Let's say that, you know, you really make a client angry and you cannot satisfy them. They turn around and they say, you know what, I'm going to sue you. So being a sole proprietor, once they sue you, if they receive a judgment against you, they have access to all of your assets. This means if your, you know, your partner works and you have your photography business, they don't only have access to what your photography business is doing, they also have access to all assets that you have, even your partner's income in that situation. Yeah. So, I mean, it's really important to make sure that you are protecting yourself and your business. The other big thing that we talk about a lot in our industry is the issue with partnerships. So let's kind of go, I want to dive into that just a little bit. There are quite a few people out there who kind of, in my opinion, kind of miss this mark. And I want to make sure that we are educating on what a partnership is and what a partnership isn't. If you and your spouse are both actively participating in this business, to me, that says like, you know, you're both doing it full time. You don't have, you know, your spouse isn't working another job. That is the need for a partnership. We see a lot of things where a husband and a wife will join into a partnership together, but one is not active in the business. Mm. And this causes a lot of problems come tax time. A partnership requires different tax forms that have to be filled out. It is because with a partnership, it's a 1065 tax form. A 1065 requires K-1s. And it also requires a tax deadline a month sooner than the personal tax deadline. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you have people who are not actively participating, that really be a single member LLC, so that we're not like having to cross those deadlines of taxes, issuing K-1s to people who are not active in the business, things like that. So it's very important to kind of get guidance on how you're setting up your business in the first place. Yeah. And that is something that we do. We do, you know, business advice and things like that, and help setting up businesses to get off the ground in the right way.
Yeah. So it sounds like kind of looking at just, okay, if I'm a brand new photographer right now, and right now I haven't even set anything up officially with the state or the federal government, would I be right to assume that the safest plan would be just set up a single member LLC, because it has the kind of the structural benefits of the corporation, where it separates you liability wise, it separates your business from your personal stuff. So if somebody sues me, they can't take my house, they can't take my car, they can't, right, you know, all of that, but they can take from whatever the business owns. But it has the simplicity of the sole proprietorship, where it's pass through income, meaning basically everything that my business makes just goes onto my personal taxes, and I pay it as if it were just, you know, my personal income rather than having to go through all of the corporate tax structure and all of that stuff. Is that, I know I'm like way dumbing this down, but it sounds like if you're going to do this, if you know that you're going to do this, if this is a real business, let's go ahead and just even just skip sole proprietorship and just get set up as an LLC.
Right.
It costs what, like a couple hundred bucks at most?
Yeah, in most states. It's done online through the Secretary of State and whatever, you know, state you're in. And it typically costs a couple of hundred dollars to do a domestic LLC. And it's, if most of them are completed the same day and you're kind of done. So
awesome.
Yes.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah. I know that anytime we've set up kind of a few LLCs at this point, because I'm that guy who's like, you know, a shiny object syndrome. Oh, I'm going to go do this now. And yeah, it's always been this thing that's like, you know, within 20 minutes of getting the idea, I own the URL and the LLC and, you know, have it ready. As long as it's, what is it? As long as it's not a weekend or after 11 PM, because the right. federal government's EIN website has hours of operation, which is insane.
Yes.
Like, yeah. You're a website, guys. Yeah, I don't, that one baffles me every time. I'm like, oh yeah, I have to wait until they open tomorrow to fill out right. this form on the internet. That is really weird.
Well, and there are a couple of states that are still not really up to date on how to, you know, do the business thing online. Texas is really bad. You have to have a bunch of paperwork notarized. You have to mail it all in. It all has to be printed. And you would think a state as big as Texas, they would be more right. business friendly and up with the times, but they're really yeah. not. So, yeah. you know, it really depends on the state, the register and the business. And most states are these days are typically online and ready to go.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, okay. So let's say they're set up now as an LLC or even just a sole proprietorship for the, you know, for the purposes of this conversation. I think when people think bookkeeper, they think taxes. So like what kind of stuff, I mean, I'm terrible about it. You know this because you work with me. I'm that guy who's like, oh, it's April. I should probably go through and now go like line by line through my bank account statements and try to categorize everything. So like, what's the right way to do this?
So the right way to do it is really to be on top of it all year. Nobody wants to wait till April. You come to me in April, I mean, hey, look, I really like did nothing with my books all last year. It's going to cost you a little bit to come in and have me basically clean up your books for the whole uh-huh. last year and kind of get started.
Can confirm. Yeah.
The correct way to do it would be to handle it all year long as it's coming in. And if you don't feel, you know, capable or able to do it all year long, that's where, you know, an outsourced bookkeeper would really come into the picture. So what I do is not just keep the books up. And that is, you know, typically the job description of a bookkeeper is to keep the books up. But I like to take it a couple of steps further. I have monthly client meetings. We talk about goal setting. We really just dive in. It's, yes, foundationally, our job is to categorize the transactions. Make sure the bank accounts are reconciled once a month, you know, take care of just the normal thing.
Yeah.
And those things are important. Categorization. Listen, come tax time, it's the bread and butter. I mean, we have to know, like, you know, how much was spent on advertising, how much was spent, you know, on all the different categories, what's your mileage look like for last year? We have to know all of that, but that's the basics. I'm here to help you grow. It's not just about, you know, the numbers and the books and what it looks like come tax time. I want to grow your business all year long. You know, yeah. I want to see that growth happen with you all year so that when it comes tax time, so we can go, look at what happened last year. You know, look at the growth that we had last year compared to the year before. So those are the things that, you know, really kind of push us to do better in this situation.
Yeah. And that's something that we have really enjoyed as well, is that it's not like you said, you know, it's not like you're getting paid just to go through our bank statements and categorize things. Are you doing that? Absolutely. But we're having those monthly meetings where, you know, for someone like me, you're kind of calling me out on some stuff, you know, like, hey, I noticed that we're spending a lot of money in this category of things. Like, what's going on there? And those may be very, you know, justifiable expenses, but at least like you bring those things to my attention and say like, hey, if we can back off of these, then we can maybe either take more profit or we can allocate more money to this because it looks like this is actually working and maybe you didn't notice, you know, stuff like right. that. So to have an outside eye going through those and doing it just from data, like there's no, you don't bring any emotional baggage into my business.
Right.
You just look at the numbers and say, this is working or this is not. And I think that it's really important to have someone who can do that, who doesn't have those emotional ties to, you know, an acquisition channel or a partner or a project, a product even, to be able to say like, hey, look, just looking at the numbers, this isn't working, but this one is. Can we start allocating more money over there instead? So almost like, I mean, it's like just shy, I guess, of like a virtual CFO type role, right? Where you're really kind of digging into the numbers and saying, here's what's working, here's what's not, and here's what I recommend.
Right. Yeah. I had to send an email to a client last week and just say, I put red flag emojis at the front of the email. And I'm like, you know, we need to chat, you know, and they're hard conversations sometimes to have in this particular situation that dealt around cash flow. Yeah. And to be able to say to that person, you know, what's happening right now is not working. And I happen to have a meeting coming up with her very soon. And I said, you know, I'm going to come to the table with what suggestions I think need to be made. And I'm telling you that this particular issue right here is a problem and you need to come with some solutions as well. And yeah. So, you know, sometimes there are harder conversations to have, but I would rather have them than to push them to the side and say, you know, I'm just going to turn a blind eye and I'm not going to look real quick. No, we need to bring them, you know, head on and just say like, what are we going to do about this? This is not a good situation and we have to fix this.
Yeah.
And so
yeah,
it comes across not confrontational, but you know, sometimes you got to be a little, hey, this is a problem.
Yeah.
And I let it grow into a bigger issue.
Yeah. And I know as creative entrepreneurs, we're especially guilty of that. We're so, and I'm painting with a broad brush, but we tend to be head in the clouds, kind of right. the eternal optimists. So when we see something that we know in the back of our mind, maybe even in the front of our mind, that's not good. We tend to always think, yeah, but that's just right now. It will get better. I'm going to just kind of stick my head in the sand and ignore it. And then I don't, you know, it's fine.
Yeah.
So yeah, to have that, the yin to our yang, that person who says like, nope, not fine. And here's what we can do about it though. So it's not like,
right.
I think that's the thing is you're not the bearer of bad news. I mean, you can be, but you bring to the table, not just the bad news you bring to the table. And here are some things that we can do to fix it. Right. And that's what, you know, it's kind of a conversation we have with kids all the time is this idea of like, you can be a part of the problem or you can be a part of the solution. And being a part of the solution does mean you need to at least be able to recognize the problem, you know, and to be able to point at and name the problem. Here's the problem. Okay, now here's what we can do about it. Because if you're just saying, here's what's wrong, well, cool, but like that doesn't do anything for me. That doesn't help me. Like that's
right.
probably not helpful at all. But if you can say, here's the problem and here's a few things that you can and should try to do, then, you know, obviously having someone like that in your corner is invaluable. And, you know, not only do you bring to the table the experience of rapidly growing your own business, but now you have the opportunity to see across all of these other industries from your clients and say, look, these are the things that are working right now. And I think that's something that I want to dig into next is, you know, you talk about how you're doing more than just categorizing, you know, transactions. You're helping your clients grow. Is there any one thing that stands out to you as like, you feel like a broken record that you're like, hey, you know what? I think that you could do this, this, or this to really grow your business. Is there anything that you find yourself saying more often than not? Kind of like a, you know, the first step for most business owners or especially solopreneurs.
I think the biggest thing is to go in with a plan. A lot of my clients, kind of like you talked about earlier, they start a business kind of on a whim and they don't go in really with a plan. And I feel like that's one of the biggest places when I can get to a client and say, you know, a lot of what we deal with is based off of the profit first method. And so we talk about, you know, the percentages used in profit first, how we can kind of tweak those percentages to deal with a client's particular business. Those are really things to give a client a plan and to be able to implement that plan for them and to be able to see the growth that they have after implementing that plan. I think that's the biggest thing. People go into business, they're blind to what's going on, and they're not really sure how to handle their money. Like, at what point do I get paid in this situation? Yeah. You know, a lot of people go in and they're just invest in the business. And then before long, they get burnt out and they just are like, why am I doing this? Like, I'm getting personal fulfillment, but I'm not making any money off of this. Yeah. This feels more like a hobby. And that's a lot of the time it takes people getting to that point before they call me in, because they're just like, I'm frustrated. Like, I can't keep going on doing this business and working my tail off, and I'm not seeing any financial, you know, benefits out of this business. And that's really the biggest thing that I continue to see repeated in businesses that I help.
Yep. Yeah. And that's something that we talk about. We call it, you know, building a job rather than building a business. Is, you know, I feel like I've built myself a job. You know, I'm like, oh, well, I'm going to have all this freedom. You know, everybody, I saw the ad. The ad said I was going to have freedom when I started my own business. And instead, I feel like I've just built myself a job, you know. And oh, I was grabbing this. I wasn't ignoring you. I was grabbing this. So, and clearly I still need to finish it. I'm only halfway through. But this is the framework that she was just talking about, Profit First by Mike Michalowicz. Basically anything this man writes, you should be reading. First of all, he's hilarious. Second, maybe I should say, first of all, he's brilliant. Second, he's hilarious. So yeah, this is a kind of like required reading for small business owners, I think.
Absolutely. I just think he is hilarious, but I love his writing style and how he just keeps things real with you. You know, he will tell you, just do it. I mean, like, stop playing around with it and do what I'm, you know, kind of what I'm telling you to do.
What I'm telling you to do. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Excellent. So yeah, I love that. This idea that, like, it just fits in so well with kind of how we teach even what we do, which is completely different than what you do. You know, we teach sales to photographers, but I find myself constantly saying, like, you need to go into this process with intention, not just this, like, not just, I'm just going to start selling things. And no, like, there's a process that people should go through. And the word intention and intentional comes up all the time. And it sounds like we're talking about very similar things in that. It's like, go into your business, go into each quarter with intention. Know what is it that you're trying to accomplish this quarter? And then break those things down into monthly goals and weekly goals. And like, what is it that I'm actually trying to accomplish? Because otherwise, that's how we end up at the end of the year saying, like, what did I do? You know, like, what happened this year? I see that income came in, but it doesn't look much different than last year. And like, how did the year get away from me? Well, it's because you didn't have any sort of intentional goals in any way to track your progress and to see, am I actually making progress or not? Yeah, I love that. I love that. Okay, cool. So let's talk taxes then. What are some things that, right? Yeah, it's a four-letter word. What are some things that photographers should be, like, just kind of like foundational tax write-offs that, you know, yeah, let's start there. Let's start with, what are the things that they absolutely should be keeping track of and writing off, versus we'll get to what are the things that might actually raise some red flags? Cause I think that's the thing that people are afraid of. It's like, well, if I claim my home office, that's a red flag, you know, or something like that. So let's start with the stuff that you should absolutely claim.
So stuff that you should absolutely be claiming: advertising, office supplies, equipment, all of those things are things, mileage.
Software yes. that you use. That's things part of like office Swift supplies. Galleries.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Perfect.
Those are all things that are tax deductible and definitely need to be included.
Yeah.
The biggest thing is to have a system, you know, have a system of which you're writing down your expenses. maybe you're not, you know, you don't quite feel ready for a bookkeeper yet, but you've got to have something, you know, you've got to have an Excel spreadsheet. You've got to have some way of tracking your income and your expenses. We did a 10 section business tips for small business owners last week on our Instagram reels. And so one of the big things is have a system, check in on it, you know. But yes, absolutely. Expenses have to be written down. Let's say you go and hire somebody to go help you do a shoot. Contractor expenses, you know, whatever you pay somebody else to come and help you. Those are all things that need to be included. Mileage. Let's talk about mileage for a second, because we just, as of July 1st, the mileage rate for 2022 from July to December just went up. So make sure that you're keeping your correct mileage writing.
Fantastic.
It's really important with mileage to make sure that you account for everything. So you really, to do it right, there is an app out there called MileIQ that is really good. If you are on QuickBooks Self-Employed, they have a mileage tracker that is really good. But write down, you really, at the beginning of every calendar year, you should write down your mileage for what your vehicle is. Write down the details of your vehicle. Because at the end of, and then, you know, obviously track your trips. You know, if you're going out to do a shoot, you need to write down the beginning mileage and the ending mileage. You need to know what those mileage numbers are come the end of the year. And like I said, know what the mileage rates are. Because like I said, this year, it was, I believe, 58.5 cent per mile, and they raised it to, I believe it's 64.5 to kind of help adjust for gas prices and things like that this year.
Yep.
So it's important to know what those numbers are and the numbers. Yep. So when you get ready to do your taxes, it will ask you what your beginning mileage was at the beginning of the year. It will ask you what mileage you use for business and what mileage do you use for personal. So those are numbers that you have to kind of know and have in mind when it comes time to do your taxes or those deductions.
So. Yep. And I'll tell you that mileage, when we were shooting full time, mileage ended up being a massive deduction for us because, you know, driving to and from weddings, driving to and from engagement sessions or sales meetings or planning meetings or, you know, all of that. And we just kicked it old school. We were like really basic. We had one of these, you know, those little teeny notebook things, spiral notebooks that just literally sat on the dashboard. And I had a sticky note that covered up my RPM meter because I never know what to do with that anyway. Like I'm never looking at that said mileage. You know, and every time we got in the car to head somewhere, we would just write down the date, the starting mileage, and a quick note about what session is this. Mm-hmm. And that way, you know, by the end of the year, we would just go in and just input all of that into a spreadsheet, send it over to the bookkeeper or the CPA. And it ended up being, and this was, I think back in my day, you know, it was like 40 some cents per mile. So the fact that it's 60 something, especially with gas prices right now, that's massive. That's massive. Mm-hmm. So photographers, I think that you're probably driving a lot. If you're not tracking this, I think you're going to find that you're driving a lot more miles than you realize. And that's a gimme. It's just such an easy write-off. And it's so easy to prove, like, these are the miles I drove. And I know that there are really like two different approaches you could take to mileage. Like you could track gas, like how much gas you actually, or money you spent on gas and like the wear and tear on the vehicle and all of that. But like, it's just so much easier to just track mileage, isn't it?
Yes, correct. So one way of doing it is to track all of your maintenance, all of your gas, all of the true expenses, and then you have to do depreciation on the vehicle when you do it that way. When you do the standard federal mileage, then you get, so they say that half of your expense is your true expense to cover your true expense, your gas and your maintenance and things like that. And the other half of that cost is for the depreciation of your vehicle.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit more difficult to track the other way. In certain circumstances, I deal like with some mobile RV techs, and it's more beneficial to actually track the true expenses of what they're having to put into their vehicle each year in a, you know, and choose to do it that way instead of taking the mileage rate on it.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Okay, cool. So mileage, one that I know in particular, and I would love to get your take on this because I don't know if it's changed, is educational expenses. So I'm going to attend a workshop. I'm going to go to an online seminar. I'm going to pay, you know, for all of these things. As far as I know, at least a few years ago, these were things that were written right off the top of your taxable income, right? Basically like, okay, my taxable income was $50,000. I spent $1,000 on educational expenses. So now my taxable income is you know, $49,000. It was just a complete 100% write-off right off the top of taxable income. Is that still the case?
Yes. So you can take masterminds, you can take any kind of educational, you know, you bought a class online, you did anything like that. All of those are still tax deductible.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where, you know, I think that we really need to see this as business owners, as true investments. And when you look at it in that light of like, okay, I'm going to spend this money this month, but it's literally getting taken off of what my taxable income is, 100% of it. Like, it's not necessarily free education because it obviously impacts right. your cash flow, but you're going to get a return on that. Not even just from the knowledge that you're gaining, you're getting a return on it in the form of a write-off. So that's why I think that education expenses are things that photographers really need to be, number one, making sure they're keeping track of and making sure they're writing off. But number two, keep it in mind when you're looking at different education, you're like, oh, I don't know, do I really want to spend that money? That's money that's going to be spent, but you're also going to write off every single penny of it at right. the end of the year. So I think that it's not as big as an expense as a lot of small business owners realize. It's like this ongoing education is it's vitally important to the success of your business, and the government treats it that way by allowing you to write it all off. So that's a big one for me. I don't know what software is though. How does software get written off? I feel like that's the one that I should be harping on because, you know, we own a software business.
Yeah. It goes into office supplies. So it gets written off as like your office supplies do. So
Got it.
It definitely right. helps.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest thing is do not neglect any of the categories on your taxes. You know, try to make sure that every expense that you have is a taxable expense and try to make sure that everything can be written off at the end of the year. That's really the biggest thing. Even if it's a couple of pennies, a couple of dimes, it all comes together at the end of the year.
Yeah. Another one that we saw a ton that is really easy to keep track of is your lab costs. So when you order prints from a professional print lab, you know, that's all cost of goods sold. That's all like, right. this is the cost of the product that I sold. So those are all, again, these things that you just write it off. This was the cost of doing business. Right. So if you're not keeping track of that, keeping close track of that, it's a massive, massive write-off at the end of the year as well. Okay, what about red flags? Like I know for a while there was all this talk about like, oh, if you claim your home office, that's a red flag. And is that even true?
It is. It still is true. So, you know, let's kind of talk about, and just want to talk about the state of the IRS right this second. So the state of the IRS is to the point that they are literally trashing paper returns. It's crazy. There was a dumpster found recently outside of an IRS office that had almost 200,000 paper returns just dumped in the trash. So, you know, we need to be careful about things we're doing. We need to keep a paper trail. If you're going to submit a paper return, you know, put it in. So everything is kind of contingent on making sure that you're getting your stuff in, and know that while there still are red flags that can happen, at this point, the IRS is so understaffed. Yes, they're still going after people, but maybe not to the point that we once thought. Home office is still a big red flag. Another red flag that is not talked about very often is the fact that every 5 years, you need to have at least 2 profitable years. Yep. So you can run your business, you know, in the red 3 of the 5 years, but you have to have at least 2 years within the 5 that you have to be profitable. If not, the IRS will say you don't have a legitimate business. You have a hobby going on.
Hobby.
So you need to make sure that, you know, at least 2 years you can clear a positive on the books.
Yep.
That's another huge red flag. There really aren't very many others. There are a couple of things that, you know, can kind of catch you up here or there. But really, you know, the home office is a big one. You have to make sure that that space is not being used for anything else other than for business. If that's your computer and you go and sit down and go play games on it in your office, then that's not your office. It literally cannot be used for anything other than work.
Yeah.
That's really a big one that they still look at pretty heavily. It doesn't mean if you legitimately have a claim, it doesn't mean don't file that. Like,
right.
There is definitely a place for it. It's just that so many people have abused the situation. You know, in our situation where we're full-time RVers, most of us live in homes, you know, 400 square foot or so. We cannot legitimately say that, you know, X square foot of our homes are used for absolutely nothing but for work.
I'm sitting in my bed right now.
You're sitting in your bed.
My bed right now. Yeah. So
I actually do have a legit desk and you know, I have three monitors here and I, you know,
yeah,
but I'm sorry. Sometimes I sit and put my shoes on in this chair, you know, this chair is not only used for just my behind when I'm sitting here working. I mean, it's used for other stuff. Sometimes I eat sitting here at my desk. This computer also handles my personal finances.
Yep.
Those are not business. Those are not times where I'm sitting here only doing business.
Yeah.
So we have to kind of, you know, keep that in mind. I get that most of your people are not full-time RVers, most of your audience are not. But at the same time, we have to be honest and open about, you know, why is it a red flag? Because too many people abuse it.
Yep. Yep.
And I've heard of full-time RVers. This situation comes up every year on some of our Facebook groups and things like that, where people said, oh no, that's my office. And I'm going to claim it in my RV. And I'm like, you can't do that. This is the reason it's a red flag.
Yeah. Yeah. This is why we can't have nice things. Yeah.
This is why we can't have nice things. When people come in and abuse the situation, then it ruins it for the rest of us. Even those who are legitimately using, you know, one room in their house as their office. So
I would say, to piggyback on what you just said, if you do have a dedicated place in your house where that is all you do. So before we moved, when we were still in Colorado, I had literally a shed. It was like, a she shed or man cave type of shed in the backyard that that's all I did in there. Is that's where I go to work. And I tried not to do any work outside of that either. And like, that was a really simple, like very black and white write-off. Okay. Yes. This percentage of the total square footage or whatever, this is the square footage of that. Here's the total square footage. And now this percentage of our internet and our phone and blah, blah, blah. Right. And that's my write-off. So if you don't have that, like you were saying, that room is also your gym. Well, you can't do that. And if you use that monitor to play your, you know, Pilates video when you're doing your workouts, well, that's not, you know, that desk now can't be either. So one thing that we've seen people do that I think works really well is to say, okay, well, I can't dedicate an entire room to being my office, but you know what? I can clear out that closet and put a desk in there, take the doors off of it, maybe put some drapes or whatever on it. And I don't do anything else over there. It's like you're militant about it. Like, nope, that's where I go to do the work. Okay, cool. Well, now you have a dedicated spot in the house and, you know, put your little Mac mini over there. So you don't think about grabbing the laptop and walking around the house and doing other things with it. You put a dedicated computer over there and you have that little space. Is it a smaller write-off? Obviously, yes, but it's still a dedicated space. And if the IRS decides that they're going to be a pain in the ass about it, you can just send pictures or, you know, if somebody wants to come out to the house and be like, yep. And there's the closet where I do my work, you know, and, you know, I think that's the important part here is that are the red flags? Yes. But if you're the guy or girl who is doing things right, then by all means, claim that. because that is not the government's money. That is your money. You know, right. We talked about this before we went live, but I'm all about paying my taxes. I am, you know, happy to live in the country that I live in. I'm happy to contribute and happy to, you know, be able to provide some of what we do to go toward the greater good. But I'm not going to provide any more than I need to, because it is not, that's not the government's money. That's my money. They already take enough. You know, I mean, there's a whole conversation to be had about how I wish I could write in on my taxes, like, here's my money. Please don't spend it on this, this, or this, you know, because like, I'm not really behind that, but apparently that's not an option. You know, I wish it was
kind of frowned upon.
Yeah, there are quite a few things that I would write down, like, don't spend any of my money on these things, but we don't need to get into that. So, but for the most part, though, if you're doing things right, which just, you know, be a decent human being and, you know, play by the rules. Does that mean, you know, obviously your comfort level may be different than mine. I tend to be fairly conservative in like, you know what, if it's iffy, I probably just don't even want to play that. I don't want to dance with the IRS. But if it's something that's clearly, yes, I'm doing this by the book, I am going to write it off, period. And I would encourage you to, you know, to do the same if you're listening to this. So, all right, let's wrap with this though. Go ahead.
I typically tell my potential clients, prison orange is not my signature color. If it's going to land either of us there, I'm not doing it. So yeah. I'm with you. When I do taxes, I typically like to be on the conservative end of things. I don't want to push the envelope too much. Yeah. I don't want it to come back on me. I don't want it to come back on my client. Like, you know, we need to do things by the book. And so, yeah, that very much. Just if you're doing it right, then do it and claim it. You know, if you're going to be sketchy about it or not quite do it correctly, then you need to think twice before you do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. All right. I know I've kept you for a while here, but I do want to get to, I know that you've got some new cool stuff coming down the pike, and I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about that. So what are you guys working on right now?
Absolutely. So we have a new brand, educational brand that we are launching that is based around financial literacy and financial education. And the name is Mobile Money Maven. It was actually given to me by one of our full-time friends on my birthday last year. He actually commented and said, happy birthday to our Mobile Money Maven. And it kind of stuck. I'm like you, I registered the domain that night. Right. Like I said, I don't know where we're going with this, but we're going somewhere.
We're going somewhere.
Absolutely. So we have a couple of different things that we're launching with it. We're doing some financial coaching for individuals and businesses. We are going to ultimately have a podcast. We are on YouTube. We're on TikTok. Going in and kind of diving deep and getting down to the heart of some financial literacy issues that are not being addressed. So I have, you know, a consulting client who doesn't know how to balance her own checkbook.
Yeah.
That's a little bit of a problem for me. Not that I don't mind taking her money every month to balance her checkbook.
Right. Right.
But, you know, we need to educate not just ourselves, but our youth coming up and things like that on how to be able to manage their money. What does that look like? So this brand is, and that's kind of the reason we're doing YouTube and TikTok and things like that. This brand is geared towards youth and young adults, just to kind of dive in, talk about budgets, talk about saving, talk about starting a business if that's what they're looking to do. Yep. So we actually have, you know, if you're interested in talking to me about bookkeeping, our website is openroadsbkkg.com/Swift. I have a page set up for anybody who wants to come in and chat with us. I'm coming from today's recording. Anybody who wants to come in and chat with us about bookkeeping. And then down at the bottom of that, whether you're interested in booking a call or not, there is a link that will take you over to Mobile Money Maven that where I have a tax sheet of 2 full pages of tax tips available for anybody who wants to go and grab those. It is free today with the coupon code SWIFT so that you can go in and kind of download that. There's some things about business formation and the different business types. There's dates for taxes as well as the common categories for tax deductions. So that's a really good thing. Go and grab that. Like I said, the website is openroadsbkkg.com/SWIFT.
Awesome. And that download is on that page?
Yes, there's a link down below. There's, you know, the calendar if you want to book an appointment, and then there's the link to the download is down below that. And just make sure we normally charge $5 for it, but if with the code SWIFT, you can get that download for free.
Perfect. Yeah, that's perfect. I think the last thing I need to know is, please tell me you're dancing on TikTok. You're dancing, right?
Not yet.
I've been telling Adrian, like, I will not, I refuse to get to the point where I have to dance on the internet to get people to book, you know, to like buy our software. I can't do it.
I did some videos last week, like I said, with our top 10 tips, and those are going up. Those are on our Instagram reels. They were on our Open Roads Instagram reels last week, and they'll be on our Mobile Maven Instagrams this week. But, you know, I don't know. My business manager, she's like, you are wanting to go with a younger crowd. You need to be on TikTok and you need to be where they are. So we'll see what happens. You'll have to tune in, find out whether I start dancing or not.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the teaser right there. Like, you nailed it. Like, all right, is Angelica going to start dancing on TikTok? Tune in next week to find out. Yeah,
that's right.
You'll never believe what she does next week. Yeah. Perfect. Perfect. All right. Hey, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate your time. And again, it was openroadsbkkg.com/swift. If you want to get that download for free, just use the coupon code SWIFT when you download it. Thank you again, Angelica. And we'll talk soon, because I'm pretty sure we have our monthly meeting coming up pretty soon.
Yep. Absolutely.
All right. Take care.
All right.